It says your learning potential, properly understood, is limitless, because your learning potential will lead you to God. Does anybody have a problem with God?
No.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So when I say God, if you feel any resistance, you can always substitute Creator. You can substitute the word love, the love that created us. I'm going to use the word God because I want to let go of all of my issues around the word. So, your learning potential, plus God's been what's been taking care of me. So I got like 90% of my grievances toward God, pretty much. Gone from teaching this for 20 years. Pretty much proved something taking care of me. And so I'm glad that every time I do what this book says, I always get the result. It's radical like that. It says your learning potential properly understood is limitless because your learning potential properly understood will lead you to God, which is love. You can teach the way to God, and you can learn the way to God. You can teach the way to love, and learn the way to love. You can teach the way to happiness, and learn the way to happiness, if you follow the teacher who knows the way to God and understands God's curriculum for learning the way to God. The curriculum is totally unambiguous because the goal is not divided, and the means and the end are in complete accord. You need offer only undivided attention. Everything else will be given you. For you really want to learn aright. And nothing can oppose the decision of God's Son, which is the same as God's creation, because God's creation's learning is as unlimited as God is. So, if we properly understand our learning potential, then our learning potential is unlimited and will lead us to perfect happiness, which the Course says God being love is also perfect happiness. So God, according to the Course, is love and perfect happiness. So it is actually another way of saying that our learning potential is unlimited, and when it's properly understood, it will lead us to perfect happiness. It says we can teach the way to perfect happiness and learn the way to perfect happiness if we follow the teacher who knows the way. So we can get what we want, which is really perfect happiness, if we learn how to follow the teacher who knows the way to perfect happiness. We can get to perfect happiness if we are willing to follow the teacher who knows the way to perfect happiness. We can get to perfect happiness if we learn how to follow the teacher. We will get what we want when we learn how to follow the teacher. And he says that the teacher is who knows the way and understands the way to learn it. So the teacher is who knows the way and understands the way to learn. He says the curriculum is totally unambiguous, which means that the curriculum does not have a divided goal. The curriculum only has one goal, and that is perfect happiness, love, God, peace, and truth. That's the only goal that the curriculum has. The way we set it up is I want to be happy, and I come up with what I think is going to make me happy, and I try to figure out how to get it. Okay? The curriculum says if you really want to have perfect happiness, then you have to be willing to listen to guidance. And your guidance only wants you to have perfect happiness. And there is only one goal, which is our perfect happiness, which is our perfect peace. I have tried, and most people I know have constantly tried to make up what they think is going to make them happy, and then they go after it, not knowing how they're going to receive it or how it's going to turn out, and build up grievances along the way because the people that they assign roles to, as far as helping them achieve their goal, does not fulfill those roles. And so they get sidetracked from their goal by trying to spend most of their time trying to forgive the people who they assign roles to. By the way, most people don't ask the people if they want the role that's been assigned. Yeah, you're my friend, you're my partner, you're my buddy, you should just want to help me do whatever it is I'm trying to do, or else you are not supporting me. And so now I have a grievance against you. I made up what your role should be, and now I'm upset with you because you're not fulfilling the role that I assigned to you in the script that I wrote for how I'm supposed to be happy. So now I'm sidetracked from my goal of happiness by having to go to therapy to forgive you for not doing what I said that you should do. Okay, so now I'm totally sidetracked. Now, really, you didn't do anything to me. The only thing you did was not do what I assigned to you. Because most of us, if we were to sit down and tell people what we expected of them as a friend, especially if we're people who have lots of roles for people, the people would never agree to be our friends to begin with. So we have to go ahead and just assume the role or just assign the role without ever asking them. Because if you just set them down and say, I'm needy, insecure, controlling, possessive, dominating, and jealous, would you be my friend? I bet most people would say, I think I'll pass, right? So what we say is, I love you, I'll be there for you, I'll be understanding of you, whatever you want, I'll help you, you can always count on me and I'll always be there. Right? That's what we say. That's what we say. But and that's important because they probably wouldn't agree if we didn't make it seem like it was that way. So it's a good strategy for getting them to join. But we know that anger is saying, you didn't act out my script. Anger is saying, you're not doing it the way I want you to do it. Okay, and I don't mind admitting that I have that programming, because if I didn't have that programming, there would be no need for me to learn the course. There would be no need for me to be on any spiritual path. So I'm not going to beat myself up about having that program, neither am I going to defend about having that program. I'm going to admit I have that program, but that program isn't serving me, and now I want to learn how to let go of that program. So he just told us how. He said, well, you can let go of the program if you do what? If you follow the teacher who knows the way, which is God, Holy Spirit, your higher self, your greater self, your divine self. Nowhere in there did it say our ego. He didn't say, if I follow my ego, I'll find a way to happen. And my ego is just the self that I think I am that does not know what is going on and only knows the past and tries to judge everything in terms of what I've gone through in the past. In case you wondered what the ego is. The ego is the part of you that doesn't know what's going to happen in the future. That's very simple. It's the part of us that's guessing and hoping and trying to use our past experience to gauge what's going to happen next. It's the part of us that thinks it's separate. It's the part of us that thinks it's a body. It's the part of us that thinks it's human. It's the part of us that thinks it's a man. It's the part of us that thinks it's a woman. It's the part of us that thinks we're separate from God. It's the part of us that we're looking at sitting in the chairs that's analyzing and wondering. That's the ego. That self cannot teach you how to be happy. And that's the frustration of that self. So when that self arrives in class, or that self comes to a group meeting, that self gets bored, that self goes unconscious, and that self isn't interested. Because that self thinks that it should be in control of the unknown. And this is just stuff that I'm just sharing with you from the book to save time. You know, it's the part of us that wants to control what it doesn't even know. Okay, and it tries to convince itself that it knows what's going on by judging the motivations and interpreting the motivations of everyone around it. That's how it tries to convince itself it knows what's going on. So it walks in here, it sits down, and then it immediately starts to interpret everything that's going on and everybody that's going on, everybody in the room, and then it thinks that its judgments are correct. And then it deals with everybody in the room as if its judgments are correct. Anybody familiar with that? Okay. The court says, that's because you're trying to convince yourself that you know what's going on, because it is too frightening to admit you don't have the faintest idea what's really going on. You don't really know what's going on inside of me. I don't really know what's going on inside of you. We don't really know nothing about each other, really. But we're going to interpret each other so that we think we know what's going on. That's the ego. That's the part that can't teach us how to be happy. It's the Holy Spirit in us, the inner guide, that we need to be happy. And the Course's purpose is to teach us how to tell the difference between when we're listening to our guidance and when we're listening to our own ego. That's what it says. It's the only purpose of the book. It's to tell, it's the way to tell the difference. Yeah.
And it also keeps us from looking at ourselves instead.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know.
What's my problem?
Yeah. What's my, well, you know, I only have one problem. And that problem is a grievance. I only have one problem. That problem is thinking I'm separate. And then he says there's only one solution, and that's forgiveness or the miracle. You know, that's the answer to that. So I'm gonna take a maximum of 5 minutes if we want to discuss anything that I just read in this paragraph, because I want to make sure I balance it between discussion and covering material.
Mm-hmm. You keep saying separate.
Mm-hmm.
How do you define separate?
Thinking separation. That, okay, it means thinking that you're different from me, thinking that you're different from God, thinking that you're different from love. The Course says to be separate simply means to believe that you're different. Everywhere you see separate, you could substitute the word different, and then you would see what it means. I'm separate from you means I think I'm different from you, and I think you're different from me. That's what separate means. I think there's a space between us, and I think that space between us is a separation by there seems to be you over there and me over here in a space between us. It looks like we have different interests. That's what it means. It just means I don't think I'm one with you. I don't think I'm the same as you. I don't really believe that my needs are the same as your needs, and my interests are the same as your interests, and my welfare is the same as you, is important as your welfare. Because if we did, there wouldn't be no problems in the world. Period. Because you would let a person go hungry because you would see it as not letting yourself go hungry. You wouldn't attack somebody because you would see it as attacking yourself. All problems come from thinking we're different and separate and apart from each other. It's what the Course says. So that's what separation is. It's the idea of being different. But he says the only real problem is thinking we're separate from God, thinking that we're separate from our source, so therefore we don't let our source operate because we're blocking it without thinking that we're separate, which is fear. Another word for separation is fear. When I'm feeling fear, I'm feeling separate from safety, separate from love, separate from oneness. And this whole world, according to the Course, is a world based on that idea. See, sometimes people will say stuff like they believe thought is creative. That's real popular in New Thought circles. You'll see people say that in a minute. Oh, yeah, my beliefs create my reality and my thoughts. But then they want to say that's true in some situations and not true in other situations. So the Course steps that up much larger and says this whole world is based on an idea. Just like the things that happen in your life are based on an idea, that this whole reality is also based on an idea. And it's based on the idea of separation. And that's why we see separation everywhere. And he says that's rooted in an idea of guilt. So this world is a world that's based on the idea that we're separate. And then beneath that, we could say an idea that we're guilty. That somehow or another we're not completely innocent. Somehow or another we are not perfect, complete, whole. And then everything we see is a result of that idea. Everything that we see is the result of that idea. Everything that we see. It's the result of that idea. And he says all we did was took the one thing and we broke it and we started labeling it. So it's just one, whatever it is. But then we divided it up by saying book, glass, table, recorder, eyeglasses, sweater, me, you, light, trees. We labeled it. And he says by labeling it and naming it, that's how we separate it. We separate it through all the labels we give it. And now we're under the illusion that we are separate. But that's where the pain is coming from. That's where it's coming from. Yeah.
First, I really appreciate every time that you sort of summarize the whole entire book in 5 minutes. I hear that every class. It's just great to hear.
Me too.
And my question is, I just want to learn more about developing a relationship with the teacher and understanding what I know when I'm listening to a teacher and how to ask for that guidance.
Yeah. Well, okay, here's the number one thing out of this paragraph to answer that question. You need offer only undivided attention, and everything else will be given you. But, you know, it's like the only to get in touch with my teacher, I need to I need to give my teacher, I need to give my path, I need to give the truth my undivided attention, number one. And it also says that nothing that's coming from your real self is going to be something that is an attack or a condemnation or a judgment on you. So every time we think we're being real spiritual by beating ourselves up about not being spiritual enough, that is always our ego. That is never God that's saying, oh my God, I need to be more loving. I need to be more, I just wish, I'm just messed up. I wish I could get my act together. Beating yourself up is still, that's still your ego. Because the love voice in you would never, you know, the only thing the love voice would do would be to point out what you're doing right. And still encourage you to do right. And it would show you what your wrong thinking is, but it wouldn't condemn you for it. And so, it's a natural process that you'll begin to move over into your right mind. You don't have to force yourself over in the right mind, because it's through repetition and reminding yourself that you change the quality of your mind. And then your mind will shift. You can't force it into being. It's sort of like a scale, like the scales of justice are in the scale. You know, you keep putting stuff in one side, and sooner or later it tips it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And until you put the last thing in there that tips it, it still stays just like that. You know what I'm saying? So every time you tell yourself the truth, you're putting something into your truth side of the scale. But to you, it'll look like nothing's changing, because until you tip the scale stays the same. So it'll look like, I'm studying this stuff, I'm reading this stuff, and nothing seems to be changing. I'm studying this stuff, I'm reading this stuff, and nothing seems to be changing. I'm studying this stuff, I'm reading this. So you're putting these thoughts in your mind. I'm studying this stuff. And then one day, you could be a King Supers.
Yeah.
And you think that thought for the 1,029th time. And that's what it takes to tip the scale of your thinking. And all of a sudden you go flip, and you're seeing it totally different. The Course says it's like waking up after you've been asleep, or just opening your eyes, or like blinking your eyes. It's like we're looking for this big dramatic thing. And it's not dramatic at all. It's just the opposite. It's like one minute you're seeing it one way, and the next minute you'll be seeing it another way, because you tipped the scale. But even though you're putting stuff in there, that's an improvement. So every time you focus on the truth, you're adding to that new perception. So don't ever feel like you're wasting time because you're trying to think differently, but it looks like you're going through the same stuff. Okay? Okay, one more.
Mm-hmm. And as you're doing that, you're raising the consciousness level of everyone around you.
That's the cool part about oneness, is that if you were to picture like a pail full of water, wherever you add water, it raises equally around the whole pail. So if you pour water, if I pour water in this side of the glass, the water would rise. If I pour water in this side of the glass, the water, all, and that's us. So every time you're putting it in yourself, you're raising the consciousness of everything and everyone around you, but you don't even realize it. It's like, look at yourself almost like a spout. But don't get trapped with trying to validate whether or not you're getting it all the time by whether or not it looks like everybody around you is getting it. That's a trick. That's a trick. If you come here today and you study the Course, your boss didn't come here today and study the Course. So if you go back to work and you expect to have another boss because you came to a Course class, you're going to be disappointed, because you came to the Course class. So you got the new perception, not your boss. So you're supposed to go back to work with a new perception of your mother, brother, sister, cousin. Not to expect, because you're studying, your mother, brother, sister, cousin going to change. So it sounds paradoxical, because the truth sounds paradoxical. You can't get away from that. We're in a world of duality. So sometimes it's going to sound paradoxical. But remember, all of those things, the Course says, are just excuses not to apply the ideas. That's just your ego trying to come up with a reason for you not to do what you're being told. That's what most questions are. Because nothing that we're being told to do requires really our analyzation. There's nothing that everything we're being asked to do just requires us saying, okay, you have a teacher, and your teacher can show you another way to look at things. Are you willing? Yes. What I need from you right now is your undivided attention. Will you give me your undivided attention? Yes. Even if you don't know how to do this, Don't worry about it. All I needed was your willingness to do it, and I'll work around your unwillingness. Would you still be willing to read this and study this and move in this direction? Yes. See, the answer doesn't require anything but my willingness, my little small willingness on my part. But my ego says, but what is the truth, and how do I know that? And I don't know how to do that. See, that's just the reason not to say, yes, I'll give it my undivided attention. Most people tell you that. If you give me your undivided attention, I'll give you everything. That's the premise of a special relationship. If you make me number one, I'll give you everything. I'll take care of all your needs. See, even at an ego level, the ego will say everything that the truth says, but it'll use it for its own personal interest, and that's how you know it's the ego using a universal law. When the ego uses a universal law, it's a universal law. That's what I love about it. You know, you can give anything your undivided attention if you want to, and most things in the world would say, if you gave me your undivided attention and undivided love, I'd really be here for you. The only difference is, when it's of your ego, it's always just for you. Always remember that. If it's coming from your ego, it's going to always be something that's just for you. And that's why it does not last permanently. That's a very powerful realization to make. You can have personal love. You can have one personal anything, but there is nothing you'll ever have personally that will last. Name one thing that you have and only you have that lasts. Anybody. Name one thing in this world that only you can have that will last. Right. See, the truth is obvious. Nobody can name one thing that only they can have that will last. Because anything real has to be for all of us, else God wouldn't be love. For me to be left out, God couldn't be love. So any love that I'm left out of, I would never form a relationship with someone that I couldn't love someone else. That's a guarantee I lose that love I have with them. I can have specialness that nobody else has, but then I'm going to lose that. Even if I die, I'm going to lose it. They might mourn me for a while, but they're going to probably move on. So even death ends specialness. But death can't end love. That's why I want to go for the love. Death can't end love, but death can definitely end specialness. Nothing real ends. Nothing real ends. See, this is a deep level we go into. So he's saying, well, should you feel guilt about wanting your personal love or your individual love? Well, the whole premise of the book, is it not that we're innocent? And that we're sinless, and that we're guiltless. Well, then that means you can have all the personal love you want. It's not going to make you sinful. And you can have all the personal love you want, and it's not going to make you guilty. Just don't deceive yourself into thinking that it's going to last forever unless everyone partakes of it. Which means that love would evidently have nothing to do with what? The body. And it would have nothing to do with sex. Because the body doesn't last, number one. But could the body be a means of coming to realize love? Could the body be used as a way to learn what love is and express love? Of course it could. But the body could never be love. That's the difference. So we know how we do it, right? We single out a person, we single out the body, we make the body the symbol of the love, we make sex the symbol of the love. And you love me if you only have sex with me. And you love me if you only give me your attention. And you love me if you don't really share your attention with anybody else but me. That is not love. That is specialness. And it's not a sin. And it's not guilty. And it's not bad. And it can be used by God to bring us to a realization of love. So it's only the ego that would tell you that the Course in Miracles is saying you can't have intimate one-on-one relationships. And it would only be the ego that would be saying that the Course in Miracles is saying that if you love somebody, you ought to just be able to have sex with everybody. Or, you know, I'm saying popular things that over the years I know that people think and say, whether y'all say it in the room or not, it's not even, it doesn't matter. I know those are the things that bring up the resistance when he talks about love, is our desire to possess. It does. Because we are on a plane where we think there is not enough for everybody, so I better try to get it for myself. And then whatever I get, I better try to hold on to for all it's worth. But people who come to a course, tell me a person gets to the point that they're studying the course, they're really at a point that they should be ready to put away childish ideas about what love and life is. Even though you're not guilty for wanting your toys, and I'm not either. Because I got toys I want. He says, nothing in this world hurts you unless you forget what it is. So pain is really coming from forgetting that it's not the real deal yet. The pain doesn't come from the relationship. The pain comes from me forgetting how to have a real one. I can have a one-on-one relationship that's incredibly wonderful, but I can't have a one-on-one relationship that's incredibly wonderful if I'm going to do it the way the fearful ego man does it. But I can have an incredible relationship one-on-one. As a matter of fact, it's for the average person, that's just most simple. That's just a simpler way to do it. It's a less complicated way to do it. You know what I mean? It's actually more less how would you like to have to please 5 or 6 egos? It's hard enough trying to do it with one. Why would I want six special relationships unless I was masochistic? You know, why would I want 6 special relationships? 6 people making constant demands and expectations of me and getting upset with me about not meeting it. It's hard enough doing it with one person. So I feel like going one-on-one until you really learn how to love is probably the easiest way to do it. Because the person that loves you is just going to want your freedom. And if they want your freedom, then they're not going to be trying to control you anyway. So then you don't get into arguments and you don't get into fights because you're not trying to control that person anyway. So it's nothing for you to argue about because you're not trying to limit them and you're not trying to restrict them. And your life is so full that you wouldn't even feel a lack if they weren't around. And you totally enjoy them fully if they were around. But if they weren't around, you'd still be experiencing love and connection and communication. I love it. That's what I want to move toward. No feeling of lack. No feeling of loss. Does anybody else want that? Okay. Enough to admit that you don't know how to do it. Enough to admit that we need a teacher. Okay. And that's what I want to be with the people that know they need a teacher. That's who I want to be with. Yeah.
So for me, you know, I have this mantra going on from you where I wake up in the morning and say, I'm loving, loving, I'm lovable, I'm innocent.
Mm-hmm.
And there's times where I actually, when I say it out loud, mm-hmm. I actually get embarrassed. Mm-hmm. It's like, I almost feel like I blush that I'm entitled to that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that has nothing to do with anyone else at the moment because it's in my head, that everybody is entitled to that love.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was thinking when you said that guilt, then I have this love going on, and it's like all of a sudden I have this terror going on at mm-hmm. the same time.
Right. That's normal.
So you just hang out in that?
As much as you possibly can. You know what helped me out a lot was when the Course said that look at it as an investment. You know, it's like people understand if they invest in something long enough, they get a dividend. You know what I'm saying? So every time I say I'm innocent, number one, me believing it is not important, not so important. You know why? Because it's the truth. Okay? You know, my believing it helps me to see it within myself. But my believing it has nothing to do with the truth of it. And that's where people get stuck, I think, is that they think that if I say I am innocent, then I can't say that unless I believe it, or else I feel like I'm lying to myself. Okay? The truth is, you're lying to yourself all the time. You're lying to yourself from the time you get up in the morning to the time you go to bed at night, so why not lie to yourself in a cool way? Because you're lying to yourself all day anyway. You're lying to yourself when you say you're not enough. You're lying to yourself when you say things don't go right. You're lying to yourself when you say somebody else is to blame. You're lying to yourself when you say you can't be loved. You're lying to yourself when you say, you know, when you say things. We lie to ourselves. Or you're lying to yourself when you say you're separate. You're lying to yourself when you say you're a body. You're lying to yourself when you say you die. You're lying to yourself when you say you're different. You know, we're lying all the time. But when you tell people, okay, go ahead now, I want you to lie, but tell yourself a good lie, you know, all of a sudden everybody becomes so moral.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, well, I couldn't say I'm innocent because I don't believe that. But you say you're guilty. That's a lie. That's a lie. You know, that you're alone. That's a lie. You know, so the court says forgiveness is nothing but a lie that leads to the truth. It's the one lie you can tell yourself that doesn't block the truth. It's a lie, too, because there's nothing to forgive. But you don't know that. So you forgive until you realize there's nothing to forgive. So that's the good lie. So the good lie is, I'm innocent. The good lie is, everybody love me. The good lie is, I'll never be by myself. Why is it a good lie? Because I think it's a lie. Not that it is a lie, but I think it's a lie. And that's why I don't want to say it, because I don't think it's true. Right? So I'm looking for somebody to lie to me. I used to get mad at people lying to me. Now I just want them to lie to me, but tell me the good lie. You know what I'm saying? Tell me the lie that you don't believe and the lie I don't believe. You really innocent right now. Even though I really think you made me mad from what you did last night, you really innocent. You really are innocent. Now, the truth is, you can tell by the talk, but I think you're guilty of sin. But I'm telling you the good lie. I'm expressing my anger, but I'm also reminding myself that you are more than what I think you are. Okay? See the difference? Yeah.
So for, to use your example, a person's own self-talk, I feel embarrassed to just say I'm innocent. Would it be good to say then, but I'm innocent for feeling embarrassed?
Yeah, you're innocent no matter what you feel. All my feelings are innocent, the way I like to do it. It's like, I don't mean I feel innocent about all my feelings, right. But it means my feelings are innocent.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. It's so much easier than what we do that it's just amazing how much resistance we have to it. You know, and don't you feel like that's amazing how much resistance we have to what I'm saying? Think about what I'm saying. And then think about the resistance that comes up, and you ask yourself, why am I resisting someone telling me that I am sinless and guiltless even if I don't think so? And even if I don't think so, I could be helped. Why am I not feeling good about hearing that? And that will introduce you to your ego. Hello, now you shake hands with your ego, because that's the only part of you that feels resistant. But my ego said, you know why? But you would tell you real why reason I don't want to accept my innocence? Because then I'd have to accept yours. And there's some people that I want to be punished, and there's some people that I got grievances against, and there's some people I don't want to forgive. And if it works, and if I'm forgiven, they're forgiven. I'd rather condemn myself to death than let you go free. And that's the problem. It's not about you don't want it for yourself. It's somebody else you don't want it for. And it keeps you from accepting it for yourself. That's interesting, isn't it? Because the person would think, oh, no, it's just me not wanting it. No. You don't want the innocence to be universal. Because people usually say, that's how I know consciousness level has changed a lot over 25 years, because people used to always bring up Hitler, the Holocaust, and the starving children in Africa, and someone being raped or murdered. That used to be always the first thing that somebody would come up with. But what if somebody murdered somebody? What about the Holocaust? You know, you have to tell me that Hitler, you know what I'm saying? And that hasn't happened for years and years and years. And that's interesting to me. That used to be like the first thing people would do would cite the reasons why. But what does that tell me? That tells me that I'm drawing more people to me who really want to accept their innocence. And I'm drawing less people to me who are defended against their innocence, which means my mind has changed. See, means my mind is changing. So thank you. You know, because I'm not concerned about Hitler. I don't know Hitler. And I'm not going to block my good because I don't want Hitler to make it. And I'm not going to block my good because I don't want my daddy to make it, or my mama to make it, or my sister. You know, that's between them and their God. That's between Hitler and God. That's between my daddy and God. I'm selfish enough to want to apply the truth to myself. The Course is teaching us how to use our own selfishness to our advantage. And I think that's awesome. You know, so I love the law of self-preservation, okay? Because it's what's making me get off my butt and actually do the course. I don't get up and do the course because I'm thinking about how it's going to benefit everybody I know, and hardly anybody does any truth, because they're more concerned with everybody else's benefit. But no, they're going to tell you, I need to get my bills paid. I want to have me a loving relationship. I want to have me a better place to live. I want to have me a better career. I want to lose weight so I can look good. You know, people be honest. They're not saying, I'm studying this every night and I'm doing this workbook because I really go to bed wanting you guys to have the things that you want. That is my top priority. That is my first thought when I wake up in the morning is, how can you all get every little thing you want? The course says, come on, get real. That's not why you do. That's not. I'm not saying you don't want everybody else to be happy, but that is not at the top of your list. The top of your list is who?
Me.
Right. So rather than fighting that, use it to your advantage. And then go, all right, you mean me giving this undivided attention, everything will be given me? If I give it undivided attention, everything will be given me? That's what it says. Everything else will be given? You mean if I focus, see what I'm saying? Now my ego goes, everything will be given me. Okay, then the ego stops fighting it. So don't, you know, use the law of self-preservation to your advantage. Do it for you. And you will be doing it for me. Don't try to do it for me, because you won't be that motivated. But you're going to be motivated for you. And then you'll benefit me, because you won't try to attack me, because you don't want personal attack for you. You will want me to be happy because you want to be happy. See the difference? And I'm still benefiting because you're not interfering with me. Okay? So, all right.
I am so amazed at how many people have never heard of the Course in Miracles.
Isn't that a trip?
Mm-hmm.
It's been around 25 years.
I'm
amazed anybody's heard of the Course in Miracles.
Really?
Yeah. This book is so opposite to everything that the average separated mind learns that I am constantly amazed after 25 years that people come to my classes or any Course in Miracles class. Not just my class. Any Course in Miracles, because it is not New Age thought, and it is not traditional thought. It is in a whole, people who study New Age stuff hate the Course in Miracles just as much as people who never picked the book up in the first place. Right, you want to make some people mad. That's what attracted me to it, was because I saw that, because I was, you know, I got into traditional thought, then I got into what they call New Age and New Thought, and then I was drawn to the Course. And what I noticed was that there wasn't any difference. Now, check this out. There's no real difference between a New Age thought person and a regular person at all.
Separate.
The only difference is the way they decided to get the same thing. That's the only thing that's different. The average person that lives next door, if you ask them what they want, they're going to say they want some form of specialness, money, and physical pleasure. That's basically it. Almost anything you can name, it's gonna fall in their category. It's gonna be something that makes you special, famous. It's gonna be something that gives you some kind of comfort, whether it's a house, a car, and it's gonna be money. You know, people wanna have money, okay? Now, a regular person goes, I'm gonna go to college and I'm gonna get a degree and I'm gonna get a real good job at Xerox or whatever, and then I'm gonna get the house. The New Age person says, I'm gonna visualize, I'm gonna meditate, I'm going to manifest. It's no difference. The only thing that's different is that the way they're going about what they're trying to get is usually not calling for as much physical effort as the way other people want. It's like almost like the laser man's way to get what you want. It's like, the truth is, I don't want to go to college and I don't want to do all this, so I'm going to manifest and I'm going to visualize. And I'm not condemning any of that, because I was right there with it. And the one advantage of New Thought to me is that it does share the idea that your thoughts are created. It does start to say something like, your thoughts can manifest. That's the whole thing that makes it cool. But the goal is the same. So the Course is not at all concerned with any of those things. And then the course is talking about it's about loving everybody, not just one person. So the average person hates it, because what is the average New Thought person looking for? Their soulmate. And what is the average person who doesn't know anything about New Thought? They're looking for their soulmate, the one special person. But I'm going to use the books on how to manifest my soulmate, where the other person is going to go to Match.com. You know, but it's the same goal. The course is a totally different goal. It's like taking you to a whole nother level of consciousness that's far beyond regular New Thought stuff. So you find New Age people will get just as upset. You know, if the course says money is ultimately illusion, then it also means a crystal is too. And it means astrology is too. And it means being a secretary is too. And it means being a doctor is too. But then they come back and say, yeah, but the Holy Spirit will use everything you've learned to bring you to the truth. So do you get rid of, or do you stop doing astrology because you got into the course? No. You let the Holy Spirit use the astrology chart to give you the messages that you need to give to the person that comes in front of you. Because the astrology chart becomes a language. It becomes a way for you to communicate to higher self. If you, whatever you do in the world, whatever your job is in the world, then the Holy Spirit uses whatever it is you've learned to do and will use that to bring truth into the world. So you don't fight your physical identity. You don't go, because it's an illusion, I'm not going to go to work tomorrow. because in most cases, you know what's going to happen? I tell you exactly what's going to happen. You're going to increase your fear, and your ego is going to be stronger than ever before, because now you'll not only have no faith in God, you'll be scared about how you're going to pay your bills. So now you're even more caught up in fear, and so you can't hear the voice, because you can only hear the voice when you're in a state of peace. So when I hear people say they're going to quit their jobs, and I'm going to go out here now and just try to do my own thing, it's like, if you had any idea the level of faith that it takes to be self-employed, like I've done this for 20 years, you know, and I hear people say, oh, I'm just going to go out here and I'm going to, you know, I read lesson two. I'm ready now. I'm going to go out. Okay, you know, and I know they're going to go right over the cliff. You know, it's like, but you can't tell them, because if you tell them, they're going to say you're being negative, and they're going to say you're putting energy on negative, and they're going to really love to say, well, just because it didn't work for you don't mean it's not going to work for me. But you know that if you don't have faith in a power greater than your own ego, the only thing you do when you quit your job is just make yourself more afraid. That's all you do. Because now you got to kind of figure out still how to make it, but you don't have any other structures that you had before to allow yourself to be taken care of. So I don't know how people do it. I said it all the time. I do not know how people live in this world with no faith in a higher power than their own ego and have any kind of peace of mind. Yeah. To walk out this door and think it's up to Earl by himself to go out here and make it, I don't see how people do it and have any joy. And here, you know, that's why I'm so deep in the course. I want a relationship with God. I want a relationship with something greater than myself. I don't want to begin to learn another thing that's about Earl, getting Earl self-sufficient. That's an illusion, y'all. Don't fall for it. That's, you're asking for struggle. And don't use your past as any proof that what I'm saying or what the course says, it doesn't work. Because your goal in the past was not to succeed. And he talked to me, we just read that part. So that before, our goal was to go after what we want and not succeed because we don't think we deserve it. So you can't look at your past and say, hey, this stuff doesn't work because it never worked for me in the past, or the last time I tried to go out and do my own thing, it didn't work out. Well, the last time you tried to do your own thing, you probably didn't have the awareness you have right now, and you probably didn't have the relationship that you're beginning to establish with your inner guide. So you can't judge by the past about anything. It's where you are now. That's what you judge by. Who are you now? What do you believe now? And that's what this next section that I'm not going to have time enough to go into today, because I just looked at it, it's amazing. 7:01. Does the time cycle pass fast or slow to you?
Fast.
Am I the only one that it seems like it passed? I know sometimes I know it seems like 10 years, but generally it does seem to pass pretty fast because we're in an altered state of consciousness, and so it'll kind of zip by. So, any other questions? So we only have a little while left anyway. You know, I really want you to use me use me. You're not going to come up with a question that somebody hasn't asked me before.
So undivided attention is just saying, I am willing.
Yeah, I am willing, and I am willing to focus on learning what is the correct way to interpret. See, the Course says perception means interpretation, and that helped me so much when it said that. Because when I say I need to perceive differently, that sounds like effort sometimes. But when I say I need to learn how to interpret differently, see the difference? Mm-hmm. See, the minute I say interpret, my mind goes, oh, yeah, but I can interpret differently. But if I said perceive, how can I perceive my mother differently? But you can easily say, how can I interpret my mother differently? And you know that's under your power. You know you got the power to reinterpret. Then it becomes, do I want to reinterpret my mother differently? And then you get to the real deal. Because the answer probably would be, if you're having a hard time, the answer would probably be what? No. Because you know what would happen if I reinterpreted my mother differently? If I was wrong about my interpretation of my mother, then that opens the door that I could be also wrong about other interpretations. I mean, my whole world is based on my interpretations. So the minute you start messing with my interpretations, you're really messing with me.
Right.
You're messing with me now, because now my whole world is, but my interpretations might be wrong and they might be horrible, but at least I've learned how to move around and manipulate around in the world that's made up of my interpretations. But when you take my interpretations away, then I really am in a state of I don't know. And guess what? As soon as you're in a true state of I don't know, that's when the miracle happens. Because now all doors are open. The mind is open. So practice saying to people when you don't know the answer to something they ask you, just as an experiment, practice going, I don't know. It'll freak you out, because as an adult, you realize you try to make up like you know even if you don't. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? That's what we are as adults. Even if we don't know, we don't like to say we don't know. Mm-hmm. But if you go, well, you know, I got this problem right here. What do you think? And you go, I don't know. I don't know how you should handle that problem. You know, it kind of gets like, what? I don't know. If I knew, I'd tell you. I swear I would. I'd be glad to. But I knew what I used to do? I would try to figure out how to solve that person's problem for them. Even though I had no idea how to solve it, I'd still try to solve it and then feel bad if I couldn't do it. And it wasn't even my problem. You know, because a lot of times if people see you as being a person that's wise, then you become their problem solver. But the way you end that real easily and benefit both of you all is just tell them the truth. And they'll stop coming to you.
That's right.
All you got to do is tell them. All you got to do is tell them the truth that you will not be on their Rolodex no more when they have their next problem. When you say something like, "Well, you know, you need to go within, and maybe you need to read your workbook lesson, and did you apply the truth to yourself, and are you willing to look at it another way, and what would be the way you think you needed to look at it in order?" You know what I'm saying? It's like the minute it's back on them, then their ego isn't going to want to come to you anymore. But what you did was really cool for you, because what did you do? You gave them what you needed to learn. And the Course says you always answer people in terms of what you want. Mm-hmm. You don't answer people in terms of what they want in that sense. Mm-hmm. In that sense, whatever, because you know people, right? How many people really take the advice of most people? Pretty much nobody, right? So you already know they're really not going to probably do what you say, no way. So let's just go ahead and get that straight. That patterns are so deeply ingrained that the average person is not going to change a pattern just because you said something to them, right? So what you want to do then is you want to say the thing to them that would help you change your pattern. Got it? So because of course it's whatever you say to them is what's going to come to you. That's the way it works in the universal law level. So what I say to you is what's going to come to me. So I know you may hate your brother, right? And now, rather than me joining with you on hating your brother, I should say what your brother is doing is a call for love, And the way you're looking at your brother is a call for love. Now that person might say, ah, my brother in the call, he hurt now, like him, I ain't gonna see that in the call. Right? And then they leave, right? But what did you just reinforce in your mind? It's a call for love.
Yep.
So you use that as an opportunity to raise your consciousness. And what's gonna happen as a result of that? You're going to draw more peace. And then that's why you'd be grateful to them. You're grateful to them because they gave you an opportunity to change your mind. But don't get hung up on them taking your advice, because in most cases, they're not. They're just not. Unless people got to be in a excruciating pain usually before they're really listening to anybody. Sad to say. Mm-hmm. But and I wish it wasn't that way. But it is. They got to be really suffering. Really bad. Then they'll go, well, maybe. But a person that's kind of like emotionally suffering or mentally suffering, they're usually delayed for years and 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 years. Because they're not really miserable, but they're not really happy. So they just kind of like stay in this zone, this zombie zone, for years and years and years. Because, you know, they can still get up in the morning, they can still go to work, they can still drive their car, they can still pay their bill. So it's not so uncomfortable, you know. It's not like when you put your hand on the stove, you're going to go... right? You go... just like that. You know what I'm saying? But we usually like the frog kind of thing, where they say you can just lower the temperature on the frog so slowly that they won't even hop off and they burn to death or boil to death. You know, and that's the way our ego does us. Of course, it's our ego... gives us just enough pain to make us think that God and the truth isn't real, but not so much pain we go, I'm going to let that go. So it's like the Course says, it's just a perfect balance and act between pain and pleasure that our ego does, so that we don't really change. The relationship won't be so bad I'll leave it, you know what I'm saying? But it won't, at the same time, it won't be so good that I reckon remember God either. Hmm. So I'll get used to it. And before I know it, I spent 20 years with a person that hasn't put their arm around me in the last 15 years. And I'm still there because I'm the frog in the boiling water. Now, one more thing before we run out of here. One of the surefire signs that your spiritual power is beginning to reawaken is that you will not be able to handle minor intrusions of discomfort the way you used to.
Yep.
That you find yourself becoming more and more impatient with any forms of discomfort or unhappiness. It won't be that because you become more spiritual, you become more tolerant of pain and sadness. When you become spiritual, you become more intolerant of your suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So if you find yourself now getting more upset than you used to, that's a good sign. That means you're waking up, that you really think you deserve better. When you find yourself not staying in a relationship as long as you would have in the past, that's a good sign. It means you're getting it. So the ego will tell you it means you're not getting it because now you're not patient and you stay upset all the time. The Course says you ought to be upset all the time at what you're giving yourself compared to what you deserve. That's a good thing. That's a good thing, yeah.
When you get upset at minor intrusions, is that your ego getting upset or your spirit getting upset?
If you're getting upset because of minor intrusions of discomfort and you want to do something about it, it's you. It's your real self. It's you reacting to the fact that you deserve something. See, your ego really wants self-preservation too, right? So if you can reprogram your ego so that it believes that when you practice the truth, it will make things better for your ego won't resist it. And you know something? It does. If you really practice the truth, all the stuff you used to try to get with your ego, it just starts to come to you as if by magic. It'll freak you out. It's like, almost like the minute you stop focusing on it, then it starts to come. So focusing on the truth will give you everything else. So like that Bible thing about seek ye first the kingdom of God and everything else will be added. That's what this is saying. Give me your undivided attention. Give love your undivided attention and everything else will be added. So let me take the love offering. Thank you all for sharing. I really appreciate it from my perspective, and I appreciate it in terms of us being able to be here. You know, and so those of you who are able to and do share financially, I want you to know it really makes a difference. It really makes a difference being here and being able to support the church. And also, I appreciate it.
Thanks,
yeah. Yeah. Thank you. The Holy Spirit is real, y'all. It really is real. There really is an inner teacher. And that inner teacher really does exist. It's not a figment of our imagination. But in the beginning, you have to invent. The Course says the Holy Spirit is an idea, and God is an idea. And just like any idea, you share it in order for it to become stronger. So every time we come together and share these ideas become stronger. And then they manifest because we're sharing them. So never think that the time you spend in these kind of groups is something that's not as important as the time you're out here hustling. You know, this time saves you so much hustling that you wouldn't even believe. You have no idea how much time your spiritual study saves you and how many problems it saves you. But because it never happens, we don't know it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's been avoided, so you don't even know it. You know, he says every time we're together, every minute that we spend together saves 100 years at least of lessons. Every minute. So we spend 60 minutes together, that's 60 times 100, right? Which is what?
6,000 years.
Okay, you save yourself 6,000 years just by spending an hour focusing on the truth today. And if you keep on doing it the rest of the day, you continue to do that for the rest of the day. That's but because we saved 6,000, we don't know what we saved ourselves. So it's like, oh, well, nothing really happened. Just another class. Da, 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 da. Yeah, you know, but you didn't get hit by that truck, and that disease was avoided, and you weren't murdered, and you weren't attacked, and you see what I'm saying? You don't know all the cool stuff that happened just because you focused on something besides your ego for an hour. We're blessed. And I feel blessed to have you in my life. Always. Always, always. So tomorrow night at 7, we got a great Thursday class, and then Sunday at 1. And there's a prosperity class here at Wednesday nights at 7 o'clock. It's open that you're welcome to come to the day that the minister does. Okay, so we get ready to head back where? Into the lab. Send them to the lab. So the lesson, right. So the word for the day is what? If I give the truth undivided attention, everything will be given me. And then read the vision of Christ. That's going to be the next section we're going to be working with. Okay.